Gaza. The name itself signifies crowded refugee camps, armed militants, rockets, and airstrikes. Periodic all-out war. This thumbprint of warm breezes and sandy beaches on the eastern Mediterranean is red with the blood from generations of conflict. Lise Doucette, chief international correspondent for the BBC, has reported on Gaza for more than two decades. She's always wanted to tell the story of how children in and around Gaza come to understand their violent world. Children of the Gaza War is a documentary portrait of how children grow up understanding that just across the way, over a fence, beyond the trees, is your enemy, an enemy you may never know.
It still amazes me that these children growing up on both sides of this border live just miles apart from each other. And yet, with every conflict, and don't forget last year's summer war was the third war in 6 years, these children grow ever further apart. You talk to their grandparents and they talk of a time when the Israelis and Palestinians went back and forth. I met a woman in the kibbutz of Nahal Oz who said that she bought her wedding dress in Gaza, and how they used to go shopping there and eating there, and how her friends from Gaza came to her wedding. But now, this generation, they have absolutely no contact between each other. So not surprisingly, you hear expressions of hatred. You know, we stand with Samar on the Gazan side of the border, and she's on the roof on her grandfather's house. And she points out to me, there's the Israeli customs house, there's the Israeli border. And all that she knows of Israel is like, in the same way the children from the other side see Gaza's jagged skyline, she sees the same from her rooftop. And all she knows is that forces come from that side. They took away her father's life. They attacked the school where they had taken shelter, an attack that also injured her mother. Her own house lies in ruin. And so all that she knows of the other side is a side that hates her and wants to cause her suffering. So, of course, she only expresses hatred for that side. And I think not only does it tell us tragically a sort of sad story of today, it gives us glimpses into a tomorrow. And for the children who live on the Israeli side, of course, they live in very different physical and political circumstances. In southern Israel, children there, if they're old enough, have been living with rockets fired from Gaza for the last 13 years. And we heard from the children there that during the war, they were told very strictly by parents and teachers, never be more than 14 seconds from a bomb shelter. That is how long it would take to reach there safely without being in the path of a rocket in case it should fall exactly where they were. So in other words, on both sides, they live with a sense of fear, they live with a sense of anger and frustration, but what they do share is a real indignation and sometimes anger that they are being robbed of the kind of childhood they all understand should be the childhood they live, but is not at all the kind of life that they are leading.
In these two different realities, can you describe something a child said or the way that they acted that indicates just the impact that this has had on them in very different ways on the Gaza side and the Israeli side?
We met a very precocious 10-year-old girl, Michal, in Nahal Oz, and she was fortunate in that she and all the other children who live in Nahal Oz were taken away from the front line into shelters in northern Israel, so they escaped the worst of it. But when she got back to her home, she saw that a rocket had hit it when she was away, and she was articulate enough to be able to express her emotions.
Nobody can tell us not to be scared of these situations. It's scary. I'm scared. I could deal with it, though.
But she also expressed some understanding of the other side. She said, you know, this war, we were born into it, she says. It's not because of us, and it's not because of the kids in Gaza. We heard a different take on that with another girl a little bit further north in Sderot. She was 10 years old. Her name was Agam. And when she and her brother summoned up enough courage to go to the highest ridge in Sderot after the war has ended, and they looked through binoculars at Gaza and they gasped and they said, look at that destruction. But yet they also said, those are the houses of people who want to destroy us. And when I said to Agam, but there are kids on the other side, just like you, your age, and they're scared as well. And she said, very matter-of-factly, well, It's either us or them. So obviously it has to be them. But having said all that, kids being kids who show an extraordinary resilience and an ability to turn a page, we did hear, though, some glimmers of hope. For example, a 12-year-old Abdul Rahman, the son of a Hamas fighter. So his neighborhood was targeted as a Hamas stronghold by Israeli forces. He lost 17 members of his family, including his father. I first met him when he was in tears, when he saw the wasteland where he used to live.
They will not destroy us no matter how much they demolish. If they cut down the trees, we will replant. If they had no mercy on trees, how can they be expected to have mercy on human beings? Is it right that children around the world can live and play in comfort and safety while we live in death and destruction?
And he said, I'm going to seek defiance. They can send as many rockets as they want. We're going to avenge them. But then months later, because we followed all these kids for many months, when I said, do you really want the war to come back, Abdul Rahman? He goes, no, I don't want to be a fighter, he said. I want to fight them with my education. I'm going to invent things. That's how I'm going to be in the future. So even in the months that we spent with these kids, we saw that despite their circumstances and very traumatic circumstances, they were able to see through to the future and trying to imagine a different future. Although the doctors all say that you can't properly deal with trauma unless the causes of that trauma are removed, and that's not going to happen anytime soon.
You've been in Syria. You spent a lot of time in Syria. That conflict is certainly not as old as what's gone on in Gaza. You've spent a lot of time in Afghanistan. What is it about the situation in Gaza, like these other seemingly unsustainable situations for human beings? What is it that keeps the situation in Gaza going on?
Well, as you know, John, just how complicated, how tangled and tortuous the process of trying to make peace between Israelis and Palestinians are. I first went to the region in 94, which was just after the Oslo Peace Accord, and it's staggering that 20 years on, it hasn't really moved on. In fact, Israelis and Palestinians seem to think it has gone even further backward. You hear people talking about separation, about division, about losing hope in a peace process, which is all process and never reaching peace. It seems to get ever harder to achieve peace. But I think fundamentally, I believe one of the maxims of this conflict, which is that often the people on both sides are willing to go further than their leaders in being able to wish for the courageous kind of political decisions which would allow them to end this never-ending conflict.
Lise Doucette, thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.